My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nice. I'm on to you. It's good to be here. I like this group. I like all groups that are enthusiastic. It's good to be enthusiastic. I'm going to read a couple of things from some conference-approved material. So I like to read a lot of stuff from conference-approved material. I don't think the conference disapproves of anything. But I mean, I don't think it's any conference-disapproved material, but I like to read stuff from conference-approved material. So if you get pissed off, at least you know it's AA that's pissing you off. You know what I mean? Well, it may be me, you know, because of the delivery and stuff, but it's really Alcoholics Anonymous that you don't like. Somebody asked me tonight, you know, all I try to share is really my experience, and obviously mixed into it is my opinion based upon my experience. I've been sober a little over 28 years, which isn't a record around here. My sponsor series got like 54 years, and a lot of guys with more time, but it's a stretch, around almost three decades, and you know, over that period of time, one of the good things about, you know, we all come in here with an opinion. I mean, a guy with 2 days sober has an opinion. And like all alcoholics, you know, most of us, after we get past the initial stage of we think we're going to die, after we start getting a little strength back, a couple of bucks or something, we all think our opinions are right and correct. It doesn't even matter how many times we've gone to jail or how many times we've fallen on our face. We just absolutely know our opinions are correct. And but, you know, what I'd like to think is that by the time you get put some time in, it's, you know, the truth is all our opinions are just sort of untested theories. As a matter of fact, most of our opinions, they talk about old ideas, most of the opinions that we hold fast to, that we absolutely believe, our perceptions, you know, what we really come to realize is they're the things that got us in trouble. I remember saying to my sponsor when I got angry, I get angry. You ever get angry? I get angry. You know, because people are such shits, you know what I mean? And so I get angry. And not for that reason, you know, I never had. You know, it says the spiritual axiom is whenever you're upset, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. I mean, I always had a cause for being angry. There was, and I would get angry and I'd say, you know, calm down. I said, no, hey, it's my person. That's just my personality. That's my personality, you know, which I thought, quite frankly, was good. I don't know why I thought that's my personality. And my sponsor said things to me. What he said to me was, he says, well, Russell, it's your personality that's killing you. It's your personality that's killing you. See, I thought it was the alcohol that was killing me. And it was my personality that's killing me. And I was in love with my personality. So I'm gonna read a couple of things from the big book. You know, somebody asked me tonight about the message. And this is just my own opinion about it. Because over, as I said, over 28 years, what you get to see is it's no longer so much an opinion as you really get to see what works and what doesn't work. I mean, you see people that are of a different opinion. I mean, they're pretty obvious because most of the time they're like in your face. You know, they're telling you you're full of crap or they're saying things like you don't understand. They're of a different opinion and you see them drink. You see them not last, okay? And you see people turn around and come around to a different opinion. You see yourself come around to a different opinion and you see incredible changes in your life. So it's not just so much of an opinion as it is you see this is stuff that actually works. I mean, most of AA was developed through trial and error. So you see, you know, you see people that are excited about being sober, that are joyous, that feel good about themselves, that have long-term sobriety, and you see that they're doing essentially the same type of things. And you see people that are upset or angry or not able to stay sober. And you see, they're sort of like doing the same sort of things. And you sort of like, you either get it or you don't get it. And so, and you know, so I am going to give you some opinions, but I like to think they're based upon the steps. And somebody asked me about my, says my message, whatever my message is, you know. And I said, well, I don't know, this is my own opinion about my own message. Very interesting. If somebody had asked me to characterize my message, I would say that for the most part, my message is an offensive one. I think I offend people. I think I'm a confrontation. I think my message is confrontational. I'm not saying that in a bad way, but I think it's confrontational and offensive. I don't think it's like it's not a convention message. You know, I was with a couple of guys that came over to my house, and we were listening to Clancy. About 23 years ago, I brought Clancy down to speak. I was the banquet chairman for the Intergroup Banquet Committee. I brought Clancy down. He's a wonderful speaker, and he has incredible messages. And I got to tell you something. I would listen to this guy's message. I mean, for a full year, I would listen to Clancy, the same message, over and over and over again in my car. I would just play the same tape. I mean, I could do it with it. I could do Clancy's message, his testimony, Ray O'Keefe's testimony, Johnny Harris's. I mean, almost verbatim. I would listen to it over. Wonderful messages, and they had great principles involved, and you learned a lot. And there was a lot of laughing, and a lot of funny stuff. And there's nothing wrong with this. They were entertaining. They were entertaining. They had a way of somehow getting a message across where they were. And you couldn't get mad at them. You couldn't get mad. You couldn't walk out and say, "I hate that guy." Right? Like, because they were funny. You know what I mean? I don't think I'm funny. I mean, people laugh and chuckle sometimes. I mean, that's not my deal. You know what I mean? I don't know where I went bad. You know, I used to be funny. No, it's true. I used to be funny. You know, I hope I'm not having turned into a bleeding deacon. I don't know what happened to me or where I went off the wrong track. You know what I mean? I'm not a kind of guy that if you're having a dinner, you invite me over to entertain the troops, you know what I mean? So I can tell them that they're all whores, you know what I mean? And so one guy says to me, because I'm a whore. You understand that, don't you? You know, I'm not calling you anything, I'm not a whore. You know? I sell myself out every day of the week for bullshit. Cheap. I sell myself cheap. Every day of the week, 28 years sober. I sell my soul cheap for a few coins. I'm not telling you anything I don't know about myself, you know. So I'm not an entertainer, you know what I mean? And I said to somebody, he says, "Well, you don't offend anybody." I said, "Well, I don't offend everybody. I guess the guys I don't offend are the guys that come back. I don't know. But some people. But I needed to be offended. You know, the truth. Is offensive. Some guy said, I offend. He says, "Well, you speak the truth." The truth is offensive. I think AA is offensive. You know, I'll sometimes read stuff from AA and guys will get pissed off. They'll get pissed off. And I'll walk up the door and they'll say, "I'm upset. What are you upset? Because you said this." I said, "No, I didn't say that. That was something I read out of AA." I said, "Yeah, but it's the way you said it. The way you said it, you know? Apparently, there's a way of reading that if you're an alcoholic, there's a way, and I've talked about the second spiritual axiom, that whenever an alcoholic hears, sees, or is told something he doesn't like, it confuses them. There's a way of reading a book or listening to a lecture, so if somebody says something that is the truth and it's offensive to you, you can make believe you didn't hear it. You know, you can make believe you didn't hear it. You know, I mean, this is a program of action. There's a great part at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. You know, the first AA meeting, I read a couple things to you from Dr. Bob in the good old times. The first AA meeting, Dr. Bob did it. He put his foot on a chair and he read the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. That was the first AA meeting. The last thing that's said by Jesus, who did the Sermon on the Mount, and the last AA meeting, he says, "I like it a man who hears the things I say and does them to a man who built his house upon a rock, and the wind came and the rain came, and the house stayed there because it was built on a rock." And he says, "I liken a man who hears the things I say and doesn't do them to a stupid guy. Because the wind came and the house, and he drank." He didn't say he drank. But I know, if you're an alcoholic, I know what he saw. Because the whole thing collapsed. You know, so the point is, you can sit in an AA meeting for years and not hear a thing. Or only hear the things that you want to hear and get pissed off at the stuff you don't want to hear. Now, I'm not saying nobody ever gets pissed. I got pissed. My whole life is a life in AA, being pissed off. You know what I mean? But the thing is, it's what you do with what pisses you off that separates the men from the boys. It's what you do that after you get pissed off, which tells whether you're going to make it or not. Because the spiritual axiom says, whenever you disturb, whatever the cause, there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with me. So a guy who's imbued with this program, who really wants it, who's willing, when he gets pissed off at whoever, me or whatever, ultimately, somewhere down the road, is going to remember that deal. He's going to say, why does this bother me? It may look like there's no rhyme or reason, but he's going to do the things we do. He's going to fifth step. He's going to talk to somebody else about it. He's going to fourth step it. He's going to write it down. He's going to third step it. He's going to pray about it. He's going to run around at meetings talking about it. He's going to listen. And somewhere down the road, it's still going to piss him off. And one day he's going to wake up and it's not going to piss him off anymore. And he's going to change. You know, that used to bother me. It doesn't bother me. Hey, you want to know something? He was right. Or maybe I don't agree totally what he says, but you know, I understand this. This is how it applies to me. He's going to apply it and he's going to change and something. And that's how we change. You know, it's like changing the direction of a battleship. You know, if I keep on walking in the direction I'm walking, I'm going to wind up where I'm headed. So, I mean, what changed you? What stopped you from drinking? What changed you to the point where you came to AA and say, I need help, I can't stop? Was it because somebody gently told you, gee, it'd be a nice thing if you'd stop drinking? You're like wrecking everybody's problem. You know, I don't think so. You got slapped out. What is the 12 and 12 say? I mean, let's assume for a second. How about this? This is a scary thing. I'm going to give you something real scary. We're going to try this out. Yes, you guys are all AA and everything. You've been around for a while. I'm going to try. Let's make believe, just for this meeting, only this meeting, that all this bullshit is true. No, I'm serious. You know what I mean? No, I know. No, I'm serious. But it's just for this meeting. You're not signing the contract here. This isn't like you're signing. I mean, listen, between you and me, it's bullshit. You know what I mean? It's all bullshit. You know, do it your way. You know what I mean? You're right, I'm wrong, it's bullshit. But just for the hell of it, because this is AA and it's supposed to be a step meeting, to make New York happy, you know what I mean? Just in case they got somebody auditing this meeting, let's make believe that what they say here is true and it's not complicated. And that's what we're going to operate under, okay? That this book is not bullshit, that when they say this is our basic text, and that it's true. And then when I read what's said in the book, we're going to look at it differently. You and I are going to look at it as if they're telling you the absolute truth. That way, if it is the absolute truth and you want to grow, and I read something, you say something in your mind like, because it's your mind and your personality that's going to kill you. Well, I don't believe that. Well, yeah, that's true, but... Or, yeah, but you don't understand. Or, but there's exceptions to that rule, you know what I mean? Then I will have helped you hit upon something where you're really sort of screwed up on. But don't worry about that. Because after the meeting, I'll snap my fingers like hypnosis. And we'll all realize it's bullshit again. You know what I mean? And you just go on believing what you want to believe. You understand what I'm saying? But just for this meeting, let me read some stuff. And then you can see where you actually are in terms of where this book says you might have to be. Does that make any sense? I'm probably not making any sense here, you know? So I want to start off by reading a couple things. First of all, in chapter 6, this is right after you've done the fourth step. You're about to do the fifth step. You know, we're on the eighth step, which really has to do somewhat with the fourth and fifth step. It says the following. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator. You see, if you're an AA, and if this is true, I don't know what you think you've been doing, or what you think this is about, or why you're even going to AA. You may think, well, I'm going here to stop drinking. Or I'm not drinking one day at a time. Or, you know, I want to feel better. Or I want my girlfriend. Or, you know, I wish I could make some. I don't know what you're thinking. But this is what it says here. The book says, it doesn't say it has anything to do about your feelings. It doesn't say it has anything to do about a car or a girl or even drinking. It doesn't say that. It says, we have been trying to get it. You may not even know that. Listen, actually, if you had done step three, no, I'm saying, I'm not talking about you guys, you know, because I know you guys have all done it. But had you actually done step three, you know what I mean? you would understand that this, because that's what they talk about in step three. That's exactly what they talk about. A new freedom, the archway of freedom, this is the how and why of it. You know, the creator stuff and everything like that. We were reborn. Oh, that's, this is what they do. So you'd be nodding your head and say, well, of course. You understand what I'm saying? Now, if you think this is kind of bullshit, well, listen, my suggestion is if this is true, you're thinking, whatever you're thinking is like your opinion, and it's different than the AA Big Book. It says, we have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. Remember those obstacles that are going to block up the sunshine of the Spirit? Because the sunshine of the Spirit, because God is really what's going to change us, because it says there is one that has all power, that was God, may you find him now. Remember it says, the one thing that we realize is that we're alcoholic and we can't manage our way out of this thing. We can't manage our lives. There's no use even trying. The more we manage, the worse it's going to get. That no, I know we want to marriage. He says no human power can relieve our alcoholism. It doesn't matter what girl, guy, whatever we put in our life, it's all going to fall apart. But God could, and what if he was sodden? Then after that, it says, being convinced of these things, we're now at step three. So it says we're trying to get, and even in the promises, it ends up saying, after you go through the whole bailiwick of all the stuff we get, we finally see that God is doing for us, that we finally see for the first time that God has done for us what we could not do for ourselves. It says, as a matter of fact, it says, if I'm in that chapter of the agnostics and a whole lot of other places, if a better moral philosophy, if better thinking could have got us there, we would have recovered long ago. As a matter of fact, Roland Hazard said, now knowing the inner workings of my mind, after all this treatment, I'm sure I'll be able to do well. Nevertheless, he was drunk in 2 weeks. I mean, it's pretty clear what they're talking about, unless you don't want to see it. So it says, we've been trying to get a new attitude, so everything in here is about knocking down those obstacles to him, to the Creator. So that when you finally get to step 11, you're there. You're at that deal, and now it's just getting it better and better and better. Better and better and better, because that's the thing that's going to transform you. We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects, right? We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. Yeah. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Yeah. Now listen, here you go. Now these are about to be cast out. Now we're about to get rid of them. It says, this requires action on our part. I mean, even further action than the fourth step. You know, the fifth step through the seventh and eighth and ninth step. This requires now action on our part. Why do we need the action? The action is so that we can get right with him, so we can have a relationship with him, so we can be a maximum service to him, so we can serve him, so we can be close to him and do what he wants. This ain't me. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, which we all know is bullshit, but for this meeting, this is true. You know what I mean? So don't get nervous, because it's all bullshit. You understand what I'm saying? But for this meeting, we're making believe that AA is actually, that it's correct. You know what I mean? So that's the deal. And then you go to Dr. Bob, and he says something like this. If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, remember, we're going to make believe this is true. This stuff. It's true. Can you imagine? Here's Dr. Bob, the co-founder of AA. Bill and Bob, you've heard of them? They're even like more famous and looked up to. I know we don't put people on pedestals, but they're Bill and Bob. The boss that is even more famous than like Joe and Charlie. You know something? Listen to me. Bob Smith is revered more as the steady guy than the guy who knew what he was talking about than even Clancy. Do you understand that? Against anybody who's ever lived that we know of in AA terms, if you were to look at the guy who's the steadiest guy, the most solid guy, the guy that Bill Wilson relied on, it would be Dr. Bob Smith. Now, he wrote his testimony. He wrote his story, and he knew this was going to be put in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, here he is writing and says, well, let me feed him some of this horse shit. This is Bob. Well, let me lie about this. Well, this is going to go on after my death. I'm not going to be serious. Let me just lie to them. Hey, I'm just going to goof off. Hey, why don't I say something that will entertain them? You know what I think? You know what I think? You know, he, in a little bit, he was like me, I guess. Or maybe I'm like him. He decided at the end to be offensive. He was offensive. This isn't Hey, I'll tell you what, the next convention you're invited to talk at, when you're entertaining everything, while they're drinking their soup and you're having their iced tea, you say, if you think you're an atheist, agnostic, skeptic, or any other form of intellectual pride that keeps from accepting this book, I feel sorry for you. And watch all the giddy laughter. Yeah, you know, he's offensive. It's confrontational, isn't it? It's not even politically correct. If you think you are an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or of any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. You know, I had a problem. Somebody asked me, before I get into my problem, somebody asked me a question. I have a strong personality. I don't even know what that means, strong personality. I think we probably all have strong personalities. Alcoholics do. Somebody asked me about a question, and actually a specific question about, you ever give somebody a silent treatment or something like that, like teach them a lesson? You know, or you ever act the way towards a person, sort of like teach them a lesson or for their own good, you know? So, you know, and I'm not saying I'm perfect with this, but I believe in tough love. You know, I think but I'll tell you, somebody asked me a question, and I'm not going to answer the question as to whether they should treat somebody a certain way. You know, having to do with their son or somebody in their family who's done something that they think is wrong. And I said, and I told them a story. It's a true story. I like true stories. And, you know, true stories in my life, true stories are the things that teach me stuff. And this is my mother was 19 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she was 69 years old, and she was a great gal, and I loved her. And she had a heart attack. And we took her to Aventura Hospital. She helped a lot of people. And we had a good relationship. What happened was, my mother, because she was an alcoholic, and she was strong-willed, and this is just my mother, and she had good sobriety, I think. But this is the way she was. She checked herself out of the hospital against medical advice. Well, she didn't stay in the hospital. She said, I want to get home. So she went home. I wasn't too happy about that. And I left my 12-year-old daughter there, Vanessa, to watch over her. And so at around 10:30 at night, Vanessa called me up and said, Dad, Grandma is smoking, because she was a chain smoker. She was a chain smoker. And, you know, I'm like ballistic. Because, you know, she just had a heart attack. She just went out of the hospital. She's like chain smoking. And I got on them and said, put her on the phone. And she got on the phone, and I just went nuts. You know, and I can't remember everything I said. And the reason I can't remember everything I said, because I was talking fast and loud. It was like, I can't believe what you're doing. You got to smoke. And she's saying, well, I'm just, you know, and I said, you know, this is crazy. What are you trying to do? You're trying to kill yourself? You know, put that cigarette down. They told you not to do it. I told you not to check it out. You know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, well, stop doing it and don't do it. You got to go, blah, blah, blah. And that's the end of that conversation. You understand? And so the next morning, my daughter called me up and told me that my mother had died during the night. It's not a happy or lucky story. She died during the night. So now listen, I know my mother knew I loved her. You understand what I mean? I believe she did. Knew I loved her. And I'm sure she probably figured out I was doing that out of love. But the last conversation I had with my mother, I was screaming at her. That's the last conversation. You know, I'd like to be able to do a do-over. You don't want to do a do-over? You know, sometimes you do things and you act in such a way and you say certain things because you figure, now I'll say this and I'll do that and he'll change or this will happen and that'll happen. And you got all these plans and designs. You're managing your life, you know? Because we're such great managers of stuff, you know? And sometimes, you know, sometimes God has different ideas and you don't get to do a do-over. Now, I would like to think if the same thing happened today, and I'm not saying I'm perfect. I can think of instances where I've done and acted the same way, even today. But I'd like to think that I've made some progress, and today I may have acted or said things a little bit differently. I might have said things a little bit differently. And, you know, one of my problems is I apparently I've been talking to this guy. I'm 60 years old. And I realized that I've been getting some bad information for a long period of time. See, I've been talking to this guy for 60 years. I got a buddy, and I've been talking to him for a long time because I'm just crazy about this guy. And he tells me all sorts of stuff, and I'm going to tell you something. Every time he tells me something, I absolutely know he's absolutely right. This guy has never told me anything that I think is wrong. He tells me the greatest shit. I can't tell you how great this guy is. You know what I mean? He explains to me how stupid other people are. You know, I can't tell you how many times that I thought it was my fault that he told me it wasn't my fault. I can't tell you where I thought I was to blame, and he told me, hey, you're not to blame. You know? And I mean, this guy, he forgives me. He's like the greatest guy in the world. He's like unbelievable. You know, he's told me things like, he's explained to me how other people don't understand and how I'm different from other people. He's explained to me about, you know, how I have a right to certain things and how I'm entitled to stuff. And you know, this guy, I'm in love with this guy's voice. You know what I mean? I'm in love with everything he says to me. You know, everything he says to me feels so good and it feels so true. I've just been listening to this guy all my life. You know something? The problem is, and it's not even a problem. You know, I listen to him so much, it's almost like I'm not even listening to him. It's almost like it's me. You know what I mean? I don't even know how to stop listening to him because I've never had a life where I haven't been listening to him and I sort of like do whatever he says. And his opinions always seem good to me. And so what happened is I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, not because of this guy. This guy had nothing to do with it. No, it wasn't his fault. No, it's true. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous because some guy, you know what I mean? I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't stop drinking. You see? Because I know that's why, because I looked some guy in the eye and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. I'll bet that's why you came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stopped drinking. I put the plug in, I stopped drinking. And then, but things like weren't great. They weren't great, you know what I mean? I go to AA meetings and stuff like that, and they weren't great, and I'd listen to them, and they would say things, and the guy would say other things, and I read in the book somewhere that drinking alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. I didn't understand that. I thought it was a disease. He says it's just a symptom. As a matter of fact, alcoholics don't drink. It's not what alcohol does to you. It's what it does for you. You know, it does something different. It's basically our cure for alcoholism. That alcoholics are restless, irritable, and discontented. And somehow, and I didn't understand this. I didn't even understand this then. I understand now. It has something to do with this guy and who I'm listening to and my perception. And then somewhere along the way, somehow, some way, my sponsor said to me, or it was made clear to me, that my real problem was not the alcohol at all. It was this guy. That I was addicted to this guy. That I had to stop listening to this guy. But you know something? I've been listening to this guy all my life. I like worship this guy. I'm like crazy about this guy. You know, he's always right. And they're always wrong. And I think of everything in the entire world, I'm more, now you know who this guy is, he's me. I think, and I don't know where me resides, probably between here, wherever he is, I don't know where he is. You know, you're thinking, I don't know if he's here, there, whatever, but wherever he is, you know what the problem is? Of all the substances in the universe, the thing I'm addicted to the most, is me. The thing I'm addicted to the most is me. And you know what's apt to kill me? Me. You see, the real disease I have, you see, I don't know what disease you have, but I have me-aholism. And I don't know how to get rid of me. And you gotta understand, this is serious shit. Because this guy is the guy who decides who I'm going to listen to. This guy is the guy who decides who I'm going to follow. This guy is the guy who decides who I'm going to fellowship with. This guy is the guy who decides what I'm going to read, where I'm going to go, what I'm going to think. He is totally in charge of my life. And guess what? The only thing he ever talks about is the one thing I love talking about. We have the same interest. Me. He's crazy about me, and I'm crazy about me too. And even if I wanted to give up me, I wouldn't know how to give up me. Because I sometimes think about me against my will, when I don't even want to think about me. I can't stop thinking. I'll be worrying, I'll be scared, I'll be anxious, I'll say, why can't I stop? And I can't stop it. Because when it's like a dance. When he talks, I gotta listen. And so I get this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is what the book says. Let me read this to you. You know what's great about this book? It's consistent. You know, if you buy into what the book said in the first thing I read, that we're trying to knock down the obstacles in our life, we're trying to get closer to God. If you listen to what Dr. Bob said when I read in that last chapter, where he said, you're an atheist, agnostic, any form of intellectual flaw, I feel sorry for you. If you can't die. The book is 100% consistent with what the problem is and what the solution is. The problem is that addiction to me. The solution is God. The solution is not philosophy. The solution is not a better moral compass. The solution is not joining a gym or better exercise. The problem isn't even alcohol. The problem is me, and I'm addicted to me, and the only solution to me is God. And I don't even know how you get that deal. I have an idea, I think, you know, and I may be wrong. It has something, because when he told me that, and maybe not in the words I'm using with you, what happened is somehow, some way, I believed him. I may not have understood it. I think some way this thing works on some sort of level that maybe isn't even a speaking level, where somehow I love this guy, I felt that he loved me, that we were close, and he would tell me things that I didn't understand, that I didn't even believe, but I believed him. So I guess you would call that like faith. You know what I mean? Which apparently is an important deal. So here's what the book says about the me thing, about all this stuff. It says selfishness, self-centeredness. Now I'm going to run through this fast. I'm going to skip around. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. They arise out of me. And the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will, of me run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Well, the reason I don't think so is because I've been listening to me. Because me told me that's not true. As a matter of fact, I was talking to me the other night, and he told me it was all a bunch of bullshit. Which is why you don't have to worry about it, because after we leave, I want you to let me take over again, and you don't have to worry about any of this crap, okay? And then, you know what it says? It said, see, now here's the problem. In here right now, only for right now, only for another 10 minutes, this book is true. You understand? But don't worry about it, because in 10 minutes this book isn't true anymore. This is what it says. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of this selfishness, this meanness. We must, or it kills us. Or it kills us. So if it's true, you know, Carmen and Jew was right when he wrote that book, Man Against Himself, in the chapter on alcoholism. He says, alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. Britney Spears, Michael Jackson, everything, you know, what we see, people dying all the time. Because this book is true. But don't worry about it, because it's all bullshit anyway. It really isn't. But, above everything, the alcoholics must get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Listen, God makes that possible. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. I can't get rid of me without his aid. Many of us have moral... Now, you may not like that. That may offend you. You may think that I'm preaching up here, but you see, don't get mad at me. Because this has nothing to do with me, because me agrees with you. I'm on your side. I'm just reading from the book. It's Dr. Bob's fault. And I beat that and whipped that guy's ass if he was here. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, opinions and everything. But we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-indulgence much by wishing or trying on our own power. We have that God's help. This is the high. Now I'm going to go through this real fast now. Not even comment because I want to get to the eighth step within the last minute. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. We had to quit playing God. I was worshiping and listening to me. How do you play God? I'll tell you how you play God. Just all your life, in whatever you do, always think about, listen to, worship, and believe you. Just think about you all the time, and believe you all the time, and be involved in you all the time, and trust everything you say, and then you don't have to worry about God because you're God. Because you're playing God, and you don't even know you're playing God. That's why people don't want to hear about God, because if God comes in the picture, then they have to leave. And they don't want to go. They'd like to stay and control their lives and manage it, because they're scared. I don't know what they're scared of. I mean, if they look back at their history, I'd be scared of letting me get back under control. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. We thought well before taking the step, making sure we're ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. This is the step we're taking to get closer to him. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done. We resolutely look for our own mistakes. We put out of our minds what he did to me. I was talking to me the other day. He says, that's a bunch of bullshit. That's horseshit. I was talking to him. I'm telling you, me is totally against this crap. And apparently my me is not much different than your me, because I've been talking to other people's me's a lot, and we all agree this is bullshit. You know what I mean? Putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation, listen to this one. This is good for a laugh. Though a situation not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and willing to set these matters. Listen, I was talking to me. He said, you're not to blame. It's his fault. He's the son of a bitch. You didn't do anything wrong, and if you did, it was his fault. You wouldn't have done it because of him. And you know something? I found myself agreeing with me. But you know something? The problem is, the more I agreed with me, the more angry I got. And I started feeling restless, irritable, and discontented. And I started thinking, man, I need a drink. Or something. Or screaming at somebody. Or pick up the phone. Or do something. I don't know. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. For we are now on a different basis. The basis of trust and relying upon God. We must trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in a world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent as we do, as we think he would have us, and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. They don't trust me. They don't trust them. They don't trust our flesh. They trust our God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate to us what he can do. What he can do. Some guy came up and he says, I really appreciate what you said. I said, you know, man, I wish I could take credit for it. Man, thank God I'm not running this show. Thank God this has nothing to do with me, because I asked me not to come in here tonight. But he crept in anyway. Son of a bitch. Instead, we let him demonstrate to us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Wouldn't that be great to have a life without fear? It says we're going to know a new happiness. Now we need more action, which we find that faith without works is dead. That's right out of James. That's the statement out of James, chapter 1. Let us look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of persons we had harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our efforts to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. We ask him until it comes. It says, now that it says this, at the moment we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in and of itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and to other people about us. I like this one. I should save this one for last. I was reading Sermon on the Mount the other day. This is in, right smack in the middle of Sermon on the Mount. Not my rules. Because I was talking to me. Me told me it was all bullshit. You know? This. Let me tell you what they read. What Dr. Bob read at the first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to read the same thing. If you are offering your gift at the altar, if you're trying to go get close to him, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift at the altar. Don't bring me any gifts. There, in front of the altar, you first go and be reconciled with your brother. You get things straight with him. Then come back to me and offer your gift. Not my rules. My rules have to do with shooting the son of a bitch. You know what I mean? Because I was talking to me, you know? The eighth step is about a new set of rules, not the rules I would want to go with. And, you know, left to my own devices, I'm always, always going to... Listen, you'll get rid of the booze. It may not come back. You'll get rid of a whole lot of things, but you ain't never going to get rid of you. You ain't never going to get rid of you. And if you ain't got something going on for you that's going to let you link up with him, you is coming back. And you will control you just like you have controlled you and managed you your entire life. So don't be shocked or surprised when people start drinking or hurting other people or doing crazy crap in AA even after 20 years. Just understand where the real addiction is. Now, for those of you who I have offended, I'm going to read this. The question of how to approach a man we hate will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude towards him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the results. So if I've pissed off anybody here, I am ready to listen to your amends. Listen, come to me. I'm a nice guy in a calm spirit. You know, don't be criticizing me. I'm not here to argue. I'm ready to, you can get it off your chest. I'm here for you. God bless you. Thank you.